good evening. I'm Melissa Idris. Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. The Pakatan Harapan Barisan National Coalition has managed to retain three of its seats, Penang, Selangor and Negeri Sembilan, while Perikatan Nasional held on to its three states, Kelantan, Terengganu and Kedah. Now, this is far from the status quo, though. On the show, we will zoom in on the seats that were won, the vote share that changed, and voting patterns evolving, especially among Malays. First on the show, we have Wan Agil Wan Hassan, who is the permanent chairman for UMNO Youth Nationally. Agil, thank you for joining me on the show today. UMNO has had a terrible showing during the state elections, winning only 19 seats out of the 108 it contested. This is the third major loss for UMNO in a significant election. UMNO has faced electoral attrition since 2008. What do you see happening next post the state polls?
I think after this quite horrible results for us, I believe the party will close ranks and start to discuss on the reality that UMNO is facing with today's political landscape. We understand that we lose quite significantly at the Malay Belt in the Northern and also East Coast Corridor. We also know that the young voters are not voting for us. And we know that we have issues in the party that we need to resolve. And there are certain hard decisions need to be made. I think among our leaders, some of them are taking responsibility. I believe that we need to take a collective responsibility. Everyone, every leaders at every level need to be responsible of the outcome. Taking responsibility is not enough. The next steps should be discussed, and we need to discuss it seriously.
Right. What do you think was the reason why UMNO lost so badly?
Well, I think there are so many issues that remain unresolved. There are three things in my top of my mind. The first one is on the narrative management when UMNO formed a government with the Pakatan Harapan. This UMNO DAP narrative was not counted properly. We failed to communicate positive narrative in regards to the UMNO DAP relationship. While many thought that UMNO is clinging to Pakatan Harapan, UMNO still cannot justify and rationalize this relationship, make sure that we are stays relevant in the political landscape. Secondly, is definitely we cannot deny the fact that we have issues defending and protecting our president's position. There are so many issues that remain unsolved, and it's not helping the party when we march to the state elections. This is where I think a hard decision need to be made. President need to be able to be open about all this criticism and also recommendations, and all leadership need to be brave enough to say the right things. And the third one is, I think, clearly we haven't done enough since we lost in GE14. We lost in GE14, we still march towards GE15, and we lost again in GE15, and we are busy with so many things, forming government, the party elections, and we lost the state election. So there's no self-reflection here.
Can I ask you about the narrative? So you pointed to the fact that the narrative wasn't communicated, right? And I appreciate that because I think even before the PRN fever, you had warned that UMNO risked losing grassroots supports if there isn't, or if the party fails to explain this paradigm shift in the choice of allies. Why did UMNO not do that? It had 9 months to explain its choice of allies, its role in the unity government, its cooperation with DAP. Why did it fail?
I think one of the reasons, because we, at the leadership level, we are not clear on the reasons and rationale why we form up this coalition, especially with DAP, after we've been a political rival for such a long time. DAP is clearly UMNO's boogeyman, and UMNO is clearly DAP's boogeyman when it comes to gaining supports politically. But we need to face the fact that at some point with the paradigm shift and new political landscape, we cannot deny the fact that we need to work together at some point. We can't deny that DAP has the support of the people, and DAP also cannot deny the fact that UMNO got support from the Malays. But this situation has not been discussed properly, and then we didn't explain properly to the grassroots when we indoctrinate them to hate DAP for years. And having leaders to just ask the grassroots to vote for DAP without clear communication and rationale, it's something that will, you know, it would trigger some curiosity and arguments among the grassroots. And grassroots will definitely not be able to understand the decision made by the party leadership. So those kind of things are one of the reasons why we still have our grassroots against the decision made by the party. In fact, we failed to bring the positive out of this coalition.
Right. Well, I mean, without cooperation with the DAP, the UMNO would not be part of the current government. And I know Isham Jalil, UMNO Supreme Council council member, had said that, you know, maybe we UMNO should review its ties with DAP as an ally in the current government. And I'm just wondering what you mean by that. What do you take away from Isham Jalil's comment that the ties ought to be reviewed? Do you agree? And what kind of relationship do you foresee going forward?
I agree with Isham's suggestion, but I'm not saying that UMNO should remove ourselves from the unity government. What UMNO should do is to reposition ourselves in the unity government. While many Malays been, you know, there's a worries about DAP will definitely give. I mean, we are not be able to protect Malays' right, Islam as a religion, and our royals and the monarchs. UMNO should position ourselves as the force to make sure that everything will be in check. We are always a moderate party. While we know DAP has their own vision and goals, but we're supposed to position ourselves as a party to be in the unity government, to put everything together and bring everyone to the center. We failed to do that. But we show to the people that we are clinging to them, looking for power by just seeking approval from DAP and Pakatan Harapan, which is putting UMNO at the weakest point.
Right. Well, you also mentioned that there needs to be internal reflection as to the leadership of UMNO. No secret, the party is wrestling with an unpopular leader. Ahmad Zahid Hamidi is a lightning rod for dissatisfaction. The last time, though, there was a protest against Zahid's leadership, it resulted in the purge of critics. Might UMNO be more accepting this time of dissent or criticism within the party?
I think at this point, every single members in UMNO need to realize that we are at a crossroad. Whether we are doing the right thing or we keep on, you know, doing business as usual, it's the decision need to be made by all party members. Whether or not the critics will be purged out, it's up to the president, because he is the president chosen by the majority of the members. But will the purging be beneficial to the party? We can see that the outcome of the last purging is not really beneficial to the party. What we need to do is to manage differences, need to be open to criticism. And I think this is the part we lack of. I don't know why. We used to be very diverse in opinions. We accept criticism. Of course, it's not pretty and it's not nice. But to even purge those people, I think this is the cost to the purging.
All right, Agil, thank you so much for speaking with me. I appreciate your time. Wan Agil Wan Hassan, Permanent Chairman for UMNO Youth. We're going to take a quick break here and consider this. We'll be back with more. Stay tuned. Hi, welcome back to Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. Let's continue our analysis of the results of Saturday's six state elections. Joining us now, Dr. Shaza Shukri. She's an Associate Professor of Political Science at International Islamic University Malaysia, IIUM. Shaza, thank you for being on the show with me today. Now, both coalitions retained their respective states, but I'm just wondering whether you see this result as the status quo, whether there were anything interesting and interesting takeaways that you found in Saturday night's results.
Well, thank you, Alice. Firstly, you're right. It's the status quo, which a lot of us did predict like weeks before that it's going to be 3-3. But also, like a lot have already said, the interesting part is that Perikatan Nasional were able to penetrate into Selangor. And interestingly, in Selangor, so we're talking about urban areas, right? It's not just rural areas, or semi-rural, I should say. In Penang, in Negeri Sembilan as well, where they did not win one parliamentary seat before, but now they got 5 seats in the DUN. So we see the increasing strength of Perikatan Nasional. In a way, it's not really surprising, to be honest. We kind of suspect that as well, that this is a continuation of the so-called green wave, that the Malays are shifting their support to Perikatan Nasional. So overall, I would say not a lot of surprises, but it's just a lot of work for the current unity government.
Right. Since you brought up Selangor, can I zoom in on the state? Perikatan Nasional's gains in Selangor, denying the Anwar led coalition 2/3 majority. Interesting, because as you said, the support for Perikatan Nasional has now spread into or strengthened in urban and semi-urban seats. What do you, how do you read this, particularly in terms of the way Perikatan Nasional framed this state election as a referendum on the unity government? What does this speak to you about the lack of support for the unity government? Is that how you're reading it? What are your observations?
Right. So we got a lot of this question, right, when it comes to Selangor. Like, how do we explain supposedly Selangor different, a bit urban, progressive? But the way I see it is it's not the same across the state, right? It's a huge state. So when we say progressive, those who are doing well, wealthy state, we're talking about people who are closer to KL, specifically in the Klang Valley, obviously. So they are obviously poorer Selangorians, I would say. Most of them are, of course, Malay voters in the outskirts of the state. And they're affected economically. And the thing is that we are aware of that Perikatan Nasional, what they did successfully is that they're able to combine the economic narrative with the identity narrative. So when we talk about, oh, Selangor being wealthy, the state government is doing this and that, you know, for the past 15 years, they have a lot of programs that help the people. But, you know, it doesn't reach people the way that they felt it should. And when Perikatan Nasional comes in and talks about, you know, the Malay position, priorities for Malays, for Muslims, etc., it speaks to them. So that is on the Selangor side. So you were asking about what does this mean for the unity government. To be honest, it directly, there's no real impact, right? We understand that the state election is different. We've had our parliamentary election last year, so it's totally different. But it has this indirect impact in terms of what the government should do now to win over Malay support. That this affects the Malay psyche, this is essentially what I'm trying to say. So it's not legally binding when we talk about it's a referendum. No, it's not a legal referendum, right? But it affects people when they see, Pakatan Harapan is not winning as much as they should when they are the incumbent. So this is the pressure.
Okay. Right. So in a bid to regain or win back Malay voter support, might the unity government skew more conservative moving forward?
I think strategically that might be where we're expecting them to go, actually. We're expecting the unity government to shift slightly more to the right than they already are. However, if you ask if this is the right thing to do, this is where I'm not so certain, right? Because I feel that it should be that the unity government, especially Barisan Nasional, should stay in the center. Because we want to differentiate what you have to offer you as an unity government compared to Perikatan Nasional. If you shift to the right, guess what? You will always play catch up to Perikatan Nasional and you can never win. So might as well you stay to the center and really develop this base that you already have. At the same time, try to relate what you're doing in the center there with, well, the Islamic identity, because basically that's what the Malay voters are looking for. So I think the government should should stick to the center, but I have a feeling they're going to shift to the right.
Okay, well, can I ask you very quickly what your observations were from Saturday night's results regarding MUDA's bid to become a third force? Where do you think MUDA as a party should be headed to now?
Well, good question. I'm thinking that what MUDA should do now is really to work the ground, right? They're a new party, I shall say, a small party, in fact. They're aiming too high at the moment, I think. And you can't expect people to vote for you when people don't really know you, right? We have this problem even from Harapan side. Relatively new candidates are having problem gaining support. So what more MUDA? So I think what they should do now is to really go to the ground, you know, have your service center operating like today. Maybe try to aim for local councillor positions. You know, these are the things that they should do. And who knows, the next election, they could have a better run, I think.
Dr. Shaza, thank you so much for speaking with me. Dr. Shaza Shukri, Associate Professor of Political Science at International Islamic University Malaysia, IIUM. We're going to take another very quick break here and consider this. We will be back with more. Stay tuned. Hello, welcome back to Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. Our next analyst on the show is Ibrahim Sufyan. He's the co-founder and programs director of Merdeka Center. Ben, thank you for joining me on the show today. I'm wondering what lessons you would tell the two coalitions to pay attention to in the takeaways from the state polls. Let's start with the Anwar-led coalition of Pakatan Harapan and Barisan Nasional. What were the main lessons that they need to take away?
I think the results show some, you know, very strong signs in terms of the segmentation of the and the orientation of our electorate. I think, you know, right off the bat, watching the results as they flow in from various parts of Selangor, I didn't get the chance to see the rest of the country. But looking at specifically in Selangor, as the results rolled in, you know, ballot box by ballot box, I think one thing is glaringly clear. Number one is that there is a kind of COVID cohort, particularly amongst younger voters. And this group, you know, I don't have details as yet, but, you know, I think 2/3 to 3/4 of younger Malay voters voted for Perikatan Nasional. This is just eyeballing the results. And these are people who came into political age, you know, after 2018 onwards. So they voted perhaps on the first time in 2022, and then now in the state elections, and certainly very large proportion went to Perikatan Nasional. And I think the sentiments and motivations that drove them were dissatisfaction with you know, politics in general, particularly politicians in power, economic insecurity, and at the same time, all of that has been mobilized towards supporting parties that speak of their ethnic and religious identity. So when we spoke to people at some polling stations, they said that they are actually happy with the state government for doing a lot of social welfare programs, but they feel compelled to vote for other parties because those other parties are championing Islam. So I think, yes, the wider livelihood issues are certainly key on the minds of voters, but identity and religious interpretation played a very strong role. And so I think the key lesson there is, you know, the government really needs to address the underlying issues very quickly, very forcefully. That is, they have to address the economic recovery and also efficiency of government services. But more so, they also have to recruit new political leadership that can connect with the ground, with the Malay mainstream, which is, you know, decidedly very right of center right now.
Okay, a couple points I wanted to discuss with you, but let's go with this regeneration or new crop of leaders or politicians that can attract a younger Malay vote. That was supposed to be UMNO's role in the in the coalition of Pakatan Harapan and Barisan Nasional. UMNO completely floundered in this state polls, suffering a resounding loss. What would happen next if UMNO cannot be the Malay vote pull for this coalition?
Well, I think, you know, in terms of trajectory or positioning moving forward, the results of this election certainly shows that UMNO cannot stand by itself anymore unless there's, you know, sea change in terms of the party itself, in terms of the leadership that is on offer, and also the kind of narrative that they bring. I think one of the major reasons we saw, you know, such very strong results is that Malay voters, by and large, were not sold on UMNO, and they didn't vote for UMNO. And on the ground, you know, people are still saying that UMNO hasn't changed. Why is that guy still leading the party? You know, why can't they fix themselves? And so they decided to give the vote to Perikatan. So I think UMNO has serious leadership issues that it needs to change. And you know, I've read commentaries that has come out to say that, oh, the reason why UMNO hasn't gotten support is because its partnership with the DAP. That's horribly wrong, because UMNO has been losing support on a consistent basis for the last 3 or 4 elections, you know. So this decline is terminal. And so if they don't make radical, drastic change, their days as a viable, serious party are numbered. So they really need to consider new leadership to line up to face the future. And I think in the foreseeable future, perhaps the balance of this term and the next term, they need to partner with Pakatan Harapan. And Pakatan, too, needs to develop its own approach towards Malay electorate and bring them over. And they cannot double down on ethnic identity, because that's going to alienate their base. So they have to come up with a new offering, a new approach to attract more pragmatic, less ideological Malay voters.
Okay. I also want to come back to something you said a little bit earlier, that this unity government really needs to address the underlying issues, which you pointed out to were economic and good governance issues. I'm wondering whether the setback of losing Malay votes, whether that might actually make this Pakatan Harapan government, Barisan Nasional government, move more to the right to seek for Malay votes, as opposed to focusing on issues of economic and good governance and reform, at the maybe even at the expense of the reform agenda and the support of the Harapan core base.
Yeah, I think that's the easy thing to think about, that since Malay voters went for a Malay Muslim narrative put across by the opposition, let's go there. The reality is, you know, Pakatan Harapan cannot go there. A party that subsists on 95% minority support cannot go and suddenly champion Malay Islam causes so easily and risk the danger of alienating that base. And the reality is, not all of the Malay voters who voted for Perikatan Nasional on Saturday did so purely because of the Islamic and Malay dominance rhetoric that they put across. Many of them were just expressing unhappiness with the way government is run, the slowness of the recovery, and also the attentiveness to issues of detail. So they really need to fix those things and also strengthen their political communications more than they need to go further to the right. Because I think that's the result show. That's they can't win that crowd, and so they have to do something different. So I think they can't go to the right, but what they need to do is to actually fix the underlying problems, the economic recovery, and I think have this mindset. Actually, Pakatan Harapan has got nothing to lose. What the results on Saturday shows is that they've hit the base of support for among Malay voters, you know, and I think that result is also the high water mark for Perikatan Nasional. And so for Pakatan Harapan to move forward, they really need to get going with the reform agenda, and they have to do what is right for the country, as opposed to try and appease the marginal or rather the hardcore Malay vote. They have to do the right things, even if it's unpopular.
So you think that by focusing on this, they can overcome, as you put it, a fragmented and polarized electorate?
Yeah, because it's very clear that they cannot win over the crowd that has been persuaded by a Malay or Islamo nationalist agenda. And so they have to win people on performance. And then they cannot hope to win 80% of the crowd. But if they can get 40 to 50% of the crowd, and I reckon that, you know, from Saturday's result, they have about 1/3 of the Malay vote, roughly. So they just need another 15% to tide over at the next general election. And those crowds that would be looking at performance as opposed to just ideology. And I think that also presents the flip side of the challenge to Perikatan Nasional. Now that they've gotten the support, they also have to perform. So for Perikatan, for Pakatan Harapan, they have to carry out the things that they were set out to do, and hope that with all the hard work that they have put in, it turns the economy around, that people come back to invest and start new businesses and create jobs that pay better than what people are used to.
Right. Thank you so much for speaking with me, Ibrahim Sufian of Merdeka Centre, wrapping up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris, signing off the evening. Thank you so much for watching and good night.